Hello, everyone. I'm reading what Lynn just wrote. She says that she heard that Steve Uphoff died this week. I'm wondering if we can get confirmation of that. Do you know if that's true? Did you hear from Lori? Lori would probably know. For those of you who don't know Steve Uphoff, he is someone who used to always listen to... Okay, you haven't heard from Lori, so this isn't really... It's from Cam, okay. He's someone who used to always come to the Regina Don Acres teachings for years, and in fact, you can hear him on nearly every old audio, or from the old audios, if you go to the Holy Spirit Guides website. Steve's on almost all of them. But I haven't seen much of him lately. He sent me several, BCC'd me on several emails earlier this year that I didn't understand why I was BCC'd on, so I didn't respond. I didn't pay any attention. I don't know why he wanted me. Other than that, I haven't heard from him in a while. She heard it from his brother. Okay, so why don't we just hold both Steve and Joe in our hearts? Because, of course, Joe passed last week, Joe Wolf. And then maybe Steve Uphoff this week. Both dear, dear friends. So why don't we just have a moment of silence for them both? Amen, and thank you, brothers, for your contribution to our experience. And the experience of everyone that you touched. We're really overjoyed to have known you both. And of course, we know you're okay. All right, so before we go into the seven steps teaching, what I would like to do is just play a song. This song kind of fits, actually, with just about everything, but it even fits with the fact that we just talked about Joe and Steve, because, you know, lots of people like to imagine that we know what happens after death. And this song is called Let the Mystery Be. So why don't we listen to this song by Iris Dement.
Everybody is wondering what and where they all came from. Everybody is worrying about where they're going to go when the whole thing's done. Just let the mystery be.
had so many good friends pass through our awareness and then pass on. And of course, we're each going to take that same journey at some point. So when it's time to know, we'll know, won't we? Yep. Yep. Wonderful friends, though. Oh, my goodness. Right now, the names are just, I mean, you know, and the faces are just kind of flying through my mind. The wonderful friends that we've met right here in Pal Talk who have come and gone. There have been so many of them. All right. So, tonight, we are going to begin looking at, quote, 738 in the Seven Steps to Awakening. And that is from the Yoga Vasistha. And the quote is this: one who has not abandoned the ego sense and mindness, I'm going to put that in the room just so you can see, it's mindness, M-I-N-E hyphen. N-E-S-S, mindness. One who has not abandoned the ego sense and mindness knows neither renunciation nor wisdom nor peace. One who has not abandoned the ego sense and mindness knows neither renunciation nor wisdom nor peace. So what this says to me is ignorance is, thank you, Kathy. She just typed it in the room for y'all. How sweet. What this says to me is that ignorance is, or I could say darkness is, or I could say delusion is, the belief in I, me, and mine, as the Beatles put it, right? I, me, mine. So I guess the question that each of us can ask ourselves, if we want to, is to what degree have I let go of I, me, mine? To what degree have I let go of I, me, mine? I was listening to David Godman yesterday, and he has a very strict definition of awakening. His very strict definition of awakening would fit very well with Michael Langford's strict definition. Those of us who know Michael Langford, we're familiar with the Sanskrit term that he introduced us to, manonessa. Manonessa, mind death or mind annihilation. And nothing less than that is awakening. And Rick Archer was interviewing David Godman. I was listening to a back gap while doing some other things. So because I was listening while doing other things, it was one of those things where I was kind of tuned in and then tuned out and then tuned in and then tuned out. So I didn't hear every word of the interview. But at one point when I tuned into the interview, they were talking about some woman whose name I did not catch and some teacher whose name I also did not catch. But the teacher was saying about the woman, apparently the woman was extremely, extremely clear. And the teacher was saying, listen to her. Doesn't she sound enlightened? And then the teacher said, but she's not. I can still see in her a small remnant of I. And as long as there is still a small remnant of I, enlightenment or awakening has not occurred. You know, and David Goblin was making the point that the majority of the people that are in the world today that have reputations for, you know, being awake teachers, he was saying that actually they still have remnants of I. That they have not experienced, he didn't use this term, but they have not experienced Manonasa. They have not experienced mind death, and therefore they are not awake. But one thing that I believe I heard in my tuning in and tuning out, one thing that I believe I heard Rick Archer propose and David Goddman accept, was that until this final awakening occurs, or this final ego death occurs, that there can be gradients of I. For instance, whoever this woman was that was being talked about, there was a small remnant of I. So there can kind of be gradients as we let go. And so I would say, assuming that is true, and based on my experience, there is some truth to that. That we experience gradients of renunciation, gradients of wisdom, and gradients of peace. The more and more that we are able to let go of the I, me, mine, the more, of course, we have renunciated, the more wisdom we experience, and the more peace we experience. And in fact, peace is a wonderful measure. In fact, let me just scoot away from the mic for just a second and grab NTI. Scooting back. I'm going to open up to NTI Philippians. See if I can find what I'm looking for. Maybe it's NTI Philippians 3. And maybe it's not even NTI Philippians because, you know, my memory isn't always perfect. I was remembering as Philippians. I think maybe I'm wrong. But anyway, somewhere in NTI it talks about peace as a measure. And it says that we experience these little stabs, I'm going to call them. NTI might even say stabs, but I don't remember since I can't find it. Oh, maybe it's Thessalonians. Is it? Yes, it's Thessalonians. Yay, I found it. Let me just read to you from NTI Thessalonians. This is NTI Thessalonians chapter 2. Peace is the guiding light that you must follow as you learn to look within the mind. For it is peace that leads you to recognition of truth. And it is lack of peace that reminds you that you are not following your way. Peace is your guide, because in peace you accept the power of God as it is and you enjoy its flow. Peace is gentle gratitude. Peace is love for all that is. Listen within for the gentle guidance of peace. It is quiet but easy to hear. It leads you in ease, acceptance, and trust. When fear intrudes on peace, you will hear it if you are listening. There will seem to be a slight upset, a stab thrust upon your peace. And, listen to this next part, and an immediate desire to deny the thought or feeling that has intruded on your peace. This is page 364 in NTI, for those of you who are going to want to go back and look at this later. And in fact, all of NTI 1 Thessalonians is about peace as a guide. So what this is saying, well, first of all, if we accept what Rick Archer proposed and what David Godman seemed to accept, if we accept that there are gradients of the letting go of the I until the final letting go happens, that manonasa, right? Then that would also mean that there are gradients of peace. So as we let go of I and mindness, more and more, we experience more and more peace. But what's really important about what I just read in 1 Thessalonians is that peace is our guide to continued letting go of the I, me, mine. When we are genuinely at peace with all that is, in fact, the words here in NTI were, we are experiencing gentle gratitude and a love for all that is, right? That's peace. When we are experiencing a gentle gratitude and a love for all that is, we are not attached to the I, me, mine. And when that stab that is thrust upon our peace comes, the slightest of set, the littlest contraction on the inside, we are attached to I, me, mine. That's why that stab came. Because, you know, somebody says something maybe and that hits up against me or mine. Whatever me or mine I'm still holding on to. And when that hits up against me or mine, I can use it. If I'm letting peace be my guide, and if manonasa is my goal, I can immediately look and see where the attachment is. Where or why am I holding on to I, me, mine in this situation? I can look. I don't have to analyze it. I just look and see it. And if I'm willing to let go right there, right then, a little more I, me, mine is let go. So peace is our guide, is what NTI 1 Thessalonians says. When I'm in peace, again, that would be a gentle gratitude and a love for all that is. That means if I have a flat tire, and yet there's still a gentle gratitude and a love for all that is, for this experience, right? Exactly as it is, then there's no I, me, mine involved. But if there's a flat tire or anything else, and there's this little stab, this little I wish this hadn't happened, then I, me, mine is there. And I can in that moment look at it with awareness and burn off a little more I, me, mine. So it might be fun to go back and read NTI 1 Thessalonians, since that's what NTI 1 Thessalonians is teaching, is how to use peace to burn off I, me, mine. In fact, the very first line in NTI 1 Thessalonians chapter 3 is, lack of peace in any measure is an opportunity to be healed. Think about how far we could go with just that one sentence. If we practice that one sentence, you know, looked at it as an opportunity to be healed every time there was this little stab thrust upon my peace. Lack of peace in any measure is an opportunity to be healed. Yeah. So let me read the quote again, and then we'll go look at the journal. The quote again is number 738. One who has not abandoned the ego sense and mindness knows neither renunciation, nor wisdom, nor peace. Actually, I don't want to go to the journal yet. So I think I asked a question. I just want to ask the question again. One who has not abandoned the ego sense and mindness knows neither renunciation, nor wisdom, nor peace. So we can each ask ourselves again, assuming that there are gradients here, as David Godman and Rick Archer seem to say, we can ask ourselves, you know, we can ask ourselves, how much do I experience the letting go of I? How much do I experience the peace, the gratitude, the love for all that is? And also, when don't I? When don't I? You know, where do I still feel those little stabs, those contractions, those wishing that things were different, those absolute it shouldn't be this way-ness. When do I experience that? Absolutely, this should not be-ness, right? And am I willing to see that's just where I'm still holding on to I, me, mine? And am I willing to look at that with awareness and peace and let go of I, me, mine there? So, one who has not abandoned the ego sense and mindness knows neither renunciation nor wisdom nor peace. All right, so I am going to go look at the journal now, and what I will do is share with you all the link to my journal. This is number 738A in my journal. There you are. What is false enlightenment? It is realization of clarity plus the experience of new seeing plus a present ego still believed. And that's really interesting. And I'll tell you why I think it's interesting. Because when I read the quote today, I immediately went to, in my inner mind, when I, you know, I immediately went to that thought that people have that I am enlightened when in fact there is still an I there. And I talked about again the teacher talking about the woman who sounded very, very enlightened, but the teacher said, I can still see a small remnant of I in her, therefore she's not enlightened. But apparently she was very, very clear, and he wasn't denying her clarity. He was just saying there's still some I there, so she is not enlightened. And that's, to me, amazingly what my journal says as well. This journal was written on July 1, 2013. I just think it's kind of interesting that this quote would have taken me to that same looking 3 years later. I had a conversation with John Mark Stroud this week about the word awake. I told him that if I say I'm not awake, it feels like a lie, because somehow to some degree I am, and I know that I am. I know how I see differently than the fully unconscious person in the world today. And so compared to a fully unconscious person, even many spiritual friends that are still fully unconscious but with a spiritual ego, I can see the awakeness. And so to say I'm not awake feels untrue. But to say I am awake also feels untrue. And when I said that, John Mark said, I am awake to my awakening. I thought, that's it. That's it. I am awake to my awakening. So, for example, if I feel that stab, I look. I don't just believe the stab and start, you know, chopping off heads and letting heads roll as they speak. I don't unfriend my friends in Facebook. I don't, you know, yell at my mom. I don't, you know, ignore my boyfriend. Whatever ways people believe their thoughts and then act them out, I don't do those things. Instead, I look. Because I'm awake to my awakening. I thought that was a perfect description. And I think what sometimes happens is people reach a certain level of clarity, which is genuine clarity. And they reach a certain level of joy, which is genuine joy. And then the thought comes into the mind, I'm awake, which has some truth to it. But then that thought is believed, like any other ego thought can be believed. And because the thought is believed, I cease to be awake to my awakening. Which means for me, if I do this, there is a stall. It could be a stall or a delay that lasts the rest of this lifetime. Who knows? Maybe it's even a stall or a delay that lasts many lifetimes. But when there's a remnant of I here, and that I accepts the idea, which seems to have some evidence, when that I accepts the idea, I am awake, it halts the being awake to my awakening, and it delays the completion of that process. And that belief that I am awake is false enlightenment. So the first journal entry is looking at that. What is false enlightenment? It is realization of clarity. There's genuine clarity realized. Without the genuine clarity, you know, for anybody who has any sincerity at all, the ego could never trick them into thinking they were awake, because they know there has to be clarity there. So some genuine clarity needs to be realized, needs to be a normal part of the current experience in order for the ego to trick us with false enlightenment. And I think this is sometimes why, to the onlooker who is looking at someone outside of them who seems enlightened and yet something's off, right? Something's off, and I think it can be very confusing, and I think this is why it can be very confusing. There is genuine clarity there. There had to be genuine clarity present in order for this particular ego trick to apply. There has to be some evidence of some gradient of awakening, or the I am enlightened thought would not be believed by any sincere person. Maybe a maniac would believe it. I heard a story the other day about a man who, I think he had kidnapped 7 young girls and was raising them to believe he was a prophet. So he was a maniac, and he may have believed he was enlightened or something, but that was not a sincere person. That was just mental insanity. But I think many sincere people have fallen for the false enlightenment trick. And again, for the sincere person to fall, there certain requirements need to be met. The first is that there is genuine clarity that did not exist during the unconscious time. Also, there is a new experience of seeing. There is seeing the world differently than the way it was seen during the unconscious time. So there is something about the clarity and the seeing that is different enough from the unconscious time. And there's enough, I would say, joy and peace and love, and the experience is very genuine. And all of that can become a setup for the I thought I am enlightened. The I thought I am enlightened. And then again, that's a stall, a delay. NTI Luke chapter 9 says that the teacher is the student. And I personally embrace that teaching very, very much. I remain within myself the student. And I would say until there is no I at all, no remnant of I at all, no thing that could be a student. Until there is no thing that can be a student, I remain the student. Awake to my awakening. I prefer to be awake to my awakening than falsely awake. So again, 738 says, one who has not abandoned the ego sense and mindness knows neither renunciation nor wisdom nor peace. And the journal entry 738A says, what is false enlightenment? It is realization of clarity plus the experience of new seeing plus a present ego still believed. I am enlightened. So I'm going to move to 738B now. Again, I will post the link for you. 738B in my journal says, it's funny reading these because I haven't read these since you know I was originally contemplating them. If one does not want to be penniless, one may spend all of his money, keep only one penny, and achieve his objective. If one does not want to be egoless, one may become very clear, remain attached to only one ego thought, and one remains with ego. Now, some of you may ask, well, why wouldn't we want to be egoless? I mean, isn't that why we're here? And maybe a better way to word that is someone who doesn't want to be me-less. How's that for a new word? Me-less. Typing that in the room, M-E-L-E-S-S. Someone who doesn't want to be me-less can become very clear, become very, very attached. I'm sorry, very, very detached. Someone who does not want to be me-less can become very clear, can become very, very detached, but only remain attached to one ego thought, one me thought, and that one still has me, therefore is not me-less. Do you see how complete this is? If one does not want to be penniless, one can spend all of his money, keep only one penny, and achieve his objective. He is not penniless. He has one penny. If one does not want to be egoless, or maybe it's better to say if one does not want to be me-less, without a me, if one does not want to be me-less. One may become very clear. Remain attached to only one ego thought. And one remains with ego. Just like in the David Godman, Rick Archer interview when a teacher was saying about a woman who sounded very enlightened, but there's still a little remnant of I there. She is not me-less. So again, if we go back to the practice of NTI 1 Thessalonians, what this is really saying is that we can use that peace as a practice, or it could be happiness as a practice, or it could be love as a practice, or it could be joy as a practice. I hear it expressed in different ways. Acceptance as a practice. Whenever we are naturally accepting, naturally loving, naturally joyous, naturally grateful, naturally happy, naturally at peace, it's okay. Just let it be as it is. But allow the self-honesty to see when there is a stab, a contraction. And know that means that I have again attached to me. Here is a place where I am still attached to me or mineness. Realize that any lack of peace is an opportunity to be healed. Look with present clear awareness. See the error, the attachment, the belief. Choose freedom, which means let go of the error, the attachment, the belief, and a little bit more of I burns away. So I'll read 738B again. This is again telling us how to keep from achieving Manonessa. Oh, well, let me read this and then I'll say what I was, the thought that just came. If one does not want to be penniless, one may spend all of his money, keep only one penny, and achieve his objective. If one does not want to be egoless or me-less, one may become very clear, remain attached to only one ego thought, and one remains with ego. And you know, that one ego thought could be, I'm awake. That one ego thought could be, I will never awaken. It could be anything. I have to keep seeking. Right? It could be anything. Anything that reinforces I. All right. Moving on to 739. Number 739 in the Seven Steps to Awakening says, the Supreme Self is in the Supreme Self, the Infinite in the Infinite, the Peace in Peace. That is all there is, neither I, nor the world, nor the mind. That's interesting. I would say that if I was someone who was experiencing false enlightenment, again, believing that I am enlightened when actually there's still a remnant of I left, right? If I wanted to, I think that contemplation of this quote could help me see my false enlightenment and therefore wake up to it and reawaken to my awakening. get back in the groove again of looking with self-honesty. And here's why. The quote says, "The Supreme Self is in the Supreme Self, the infinite in the infinite, the peace in the peace." And then it says, "That is all there is." That is all there is. There is the self in the self. Or we could call it the infinite in the infinite. Or we could call it the peace in the peace. But there is nothing else. Therefore, there is no I to be enlightened. But if I bought the thought I am enlightened, I may now have a blind spot to my I, right? If I bought the thought I am enlightened, I may have a blind spot to my I. I might not see my I. Therefore, I might not see the little remnant of I that is remaining. However, this particular quote gives me two more things to look for besides the I that I may have blinded myself to. This particular quote says, "The Supreme Self is in the Supreme Self, the infinite in the infinite, the peace in peace. That is all there is." And then it goes on to say, "Neither I nor the world nor the mind." Neither I nor the world nor the mind. Again, I'm reminded of the term manonasa, mind death. Also, if you've read the book Manonasa, you know that Michael writes about seeing no world. Not with true sight. So, I have heard, and I'm sure you guys have too, I have heard people talk about, I am awake, but the mind is still here, right? I am awake, but the mind is still here. It's just that it's meaningless. I don't pay attention to it, right? Well, this quote says, "The Supreme Self is in the Supreme Self, the infinite in the infinite, the peace in the peace. That is all there is, neither I nor the world nor the mind." Nor the mind. So if I really contemplate this quote, even if I am blind to my I, because I accepted the idea I am enlightened, it's possible I'm not blind to the mind. It's possible that I'm one of those people that says, well, I am enlightened, but the mind is still here. In fact, I've even heard some say, you know, I am enlightened or I am awake, but the mind is still here. And I've heard them say, the mind never goes away. So, not being blind to the mind, contemplating this could reawaken me to my awakening. If I see, wait a minute, the mind is still here. I see the mind every day. I know that it's still here. The mind meaning the chattering, not the tool. Not the tool I use to read, or the tool I use to do math, or the tool I use to figure out why my computer isn't working, but the chattering. If it's still here, then I need to reawaken to my awakening. And then this goes what I perceive to be even one step further. But it's not any further than A Course in Miracles goes, and it's not any further than Michael Langford goes. Because this also says, "The Supreme Self is in the Supreme Self, the infinite in the infinite, the peace in peace. That is all there is, neither I nor the world nor the mind." I have also heard people speak about how you awaken, but then you come back and everything's still here. The world is still here. So maybe that awakening was a genuine experience, but there's still a remnant of I left. In fact, Ramana Maharshi taught that first comes the I and then the world. If there is no I, there can be no world. That was Ramana Maharshi's teaching. Nisargadatta's teaching, the same. So if I experience a world, even if I love this world, there's great joy in this world, I'm in acceptance of this world, but there's still a world, maybe there is also still a remnant of I left, and I need to reawaken to my awakening and quit thinking that I am awake, which has, you know, caused me to kind of go back to sleep, right? Lynn says, do you think the chattering totally disappears with true awakening? I do. And I do because the teachers that I trust the most, like Ramana Maharshi and Nisargadatta Maharaj, say that.